Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. So there's this rule in broadcasting that you never start a story looking backwards and you never start a story with a historical date. But I'm going to do both today because in its own way, history is coming full circle twice in Boston this week. First, back in 1970, the firestorm of protest over the shootings at Kent State University led Boston University to cancel its graduation ceremonies. But this weekend, members of the BU class of 70 will walk with the class of 2010. Later this hour, we'll get their stories of protest, pomp, and circumstance. Then there's yesterday's FBI sweep in Watertown and Brookline. That harkens back to 9/11, a terrorist incident in New York that once again traces back, in part, to Boston. But this time, federal agents arrested two individuals in connection to the attempted bombing in Times Square that happened on May 1st. The raid caused particular stir in Brookline. One of the men arrested was an attendant at a mobile station just south of Coolidge Corner. As Brookline resident Michael Monroe walked by yesterday, he had nothing but positive things to say about the station's owner, Elias Audi.
And he contributes to all the local organizations, the PTOs, to the civic associations. Struck me like a gentleman, struck me like someone who wants to, who's profited from the community and wants to give back.
To be clear, authorities have not charged Elias Audi with any crime. Rather, they've said that the two men who were arrested may have financial connections to Faisal Shahzad. He's the alleged Times Square bomber. NPR counterterrorism correspondent Dina Temple-Raston has been working on the story, and she joins me now from New York. Welcome to Radio Boston, Dina. Dina, are you there?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Sorry about that.
Sorry about that.
Push the right
Verizon commercial there. Sorry.
Push the right button. But thank you again for joining us on Radio Boston. Let me just start off by asking you, what have we learned about the two suspects who were arrested in the Boston area yesterday?
Well, the two suspects are a gentleman named Pir Khan and another one named Aftab Khan. And we don't know a great deal about them, but Pir Khan is a cab driver. And as far as I know, Elias he hasn't been arrested. He was questioned yesterday, and that was it. I don't think he's part of this. The two men who were arrested in the Boston area yesterday, what they're suspected of doing is of facilitating getting money to Faisal Shahzad, who is the main suspect in the Times Square bombing. And it's quite possible that these men are completely innocent of knowing what this money was supposed to be used for, that basically they used a remittance system that a lot of South Asian immigrants use and gave him this money without knowing that it was going to possibly finance the Times Square bombing.
And that remittance system called the Hawala system. I'm going to ask you about that a little bit more in a second, but the fact that they may not have known was actually somewhat referenced by Attorney General Eric Holder yesterday when he testified before the House Judiciary Committee. It's one of the reasons why he made a point of downplaying any immediate danger posed by these men. Let's listen.
These searches are the product of evidence that has been gathered in the investigation since the attempted Times Square bombing and do not relate to any known immediate threat to the public or active plot against the United States.
And Dina, Governor Deval Patrick here in Massachusetts basically said the same thing. So if they're not posing an immediate threat and they may not have known what role they were playing in this money, Hawala money transfer system, they were still picked up for some reason and that was on immigration charges. Is that correct?
Exactly. I think they overstayed their visas. And so right now it's civil charges. There's nothing criminal whatsoever that they're being charged with.
Mm-hmm. So on this, the question of money and financial transfers in alleged terrorist activities, I'm wondering if, you know, this was obviously a big issue after 9/11. The Hawala system came under very close scrutiny because of the fact that it's not very closely regulated, at least. There's no official movement of cash, physical cash, from one place to the next. So is the fact that the FBI picked up Faisal Shahzad, the alleged Times Square bomber, way back in the beginning of this month, are we getting a sense that maybe the federal agents aren't paying as close attention to the Hawala system as we thought they would be?
Well, there's not really a way to pay attention to it, and because its record keeping is so bad. That's what part of the problem is. Is essentially what happens. Let's say, for example, I have family in South Asia, and I'm a taxi driver in the Boston area, and I need to send my mother $500 for something, and she lives in Pakistan. So I would take this $500 and go to essentially a broker and say, I need this money to go to my mother. And they would say, no problem. We have someone who lives in Karachi, not far from where your mother lives. You give us the $500 plus, I don't know, some sort of handling fee, and we'll make sure that money gets to your mother. Now, the money never actually transfers. He just calls another broker in Karachi that he has a relationship with and says, could you please give $500 to this woman at this address? And they go and do that. So it's really very much an honor system. It's not like the money actually transfers down to Pakistan. It doesn't.
Mm-hmm. In that case, and perhaps are your sources telling you that they were pointed, the federal agents were pointed to these two men in the Boston area from what Faisal Shahzad has been telling them, because he's been talking pretty openly since he was arrested just after the alleged Times Square bombing.
That's right. I mean, he's been talking to them now for, this is, I think, day 14. And generally what happens when there's an arrest, right, you go and appear before a judge and answer the charges. And he has waived his right to do that. And one of the reasons he's done that is because he's been talking so extensively with authorities that authorities don't want to break the flow of his conversation by having him go into court.
Mm-hmm. So is this investigation then moving faster than others have previously because of that?
I'm not sure that it's moving faster. Let's just say that, you know, there's a lot of from the sources that I've talked to in law enforcement, there are a lot of things he said, particularly in the beginning, that just didn't check out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're talking very freely, but apparently he pretty much said he met every, you know, well-known Taliban leader that you've ever heard of or read about in the paper. And as you chase this down, this isn't exactly what happened. And then he said he trained with one person. It turned out to be another person. So, you know, they're having to check a lot of boxes. So he's also, remember, he's trying to figure out how much they really know and how much he can hold back. So it's a little bit of a cat and mouse game that you play with law enforcement. So it's not like 14 days of constant talking. It's 14 days of a little tidbit of information and then checking it out with other sources.
And some of those tidbits led federal agents right here back to Boston. That's NPR counterterrorism correspondent Dina Temple-Raston. Thank you so much for joining us on Radio Boston, Dina.
You're very welcome.